That's right. It's Thursday afternoon, kind of cloudy out there, but hey, it's sunshiny right here at Sharp Facets Gallery in my studio back here. We're going to be talking about a topic maybe that nobody likes to talk about, but we need to talk about it because we have so many people that we know have been touched by alcoholism, addiction, and we have Cornerstone sitting here with us today. I have Teresa Roy, and I have Lori Fallow. Is that right?
Fallow.
Mm-hmm. Fallow. Okay. Lori Fallow is with us here, too. Lori is the executive director of Cornerstone, and Teresa is the director of community outreach with Cornerstone. Welcome to the show today, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It is a subject that sometimes is tough to talk about, isn't it, Lori?
It can be very tough to talk about, but it can be very real, and we need to have these conversations, and we really do appreciate you shedding some light on this topic for our community to have a better understanding.
Sure. I know. I think it's great. I don't know if you even know this, but several years ago, right here on the radio, we did a live Alcoholics Anonymous meeting right here on the radio. We got it all approved through the services and everything, and had one right here. It really was, I think, very eye-opening for people at that time to know actually what goes on at a meeting. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it is a good thing to talk about. I think everybody knows somebody that battles something. Would that be right, Teresa?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, everybody, if you're not touched with it directly, then you have a family member or you have a close friend, and we see it in the news. And addiction reaches out for everybody. It doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter your socioeconomic range. We've seen politicians, we've seen stars, you know.
Right. And really, we always think it's the down and out, don't we? That's always the reaction.
Exactly. But less than 30% of those with substance use disorders are what most people would characterize your skid row bums. Mm-hmm. Most people have jobs. They go to work every day. They have families. They're coaching teams. They're running corporations. So it really does impact all of us as a community.
Sure. And you know, I think it's good to know that there is a place that you can go. Now, Lori, how did Cornerstone start?
Cornerstone started from the Act 301 system back in 1973, I believe, when the taxation of alcohol, that they tried to consider an appropriate way to provide monies to treat folks who had problems with alcohol or drugs, and our system was born, which is called the 301 system. In the 46 counties in South Carolina, there are 33 alcohol and drug commissions that serve the 46 counties of the state. We have offices in Greenwood, Edgefield, McCormick, and Abbeville, but we are actually considered one agency by the South Carolina Department of Alcohol and Other Drug Services.
Now, where is Cornerstone located?
We are located just across the street from Jumpin' Jacks. We're on River Street. Yes.
Okay.
So it's behind Walmart.
Okay.
On Budrow Street. We're on the corner of Budrow and Rivers.
Well, that's now you used to be in a church, didn't you? Didn't you used to be someplace else over in the Mill Village? No?
No. But there, I believe there is a church called Cornerstone Church.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But we did used to be over beside the hospital across from Subway.
Oh, okay.
On the south end, and we've moved about 6 years ago. We've been in our new building.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's great. Now, Teresa, what exactly happens at Cornerstone?
Oh, wow. A lot of things.
I know.
A lot of wonderful things.
If somebody is sitting there going, well, either I have the problem or I know somebody that has a problem, what are the steps then, let's do it this way, about moving towards going to Cornerstone?
Okay. Really all they have to do is just either call us or walk in. We do intake on demand. We do that on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and that's a first come, first serve. And they need to be there by 8:30. But basically, if someone wanted to call and talk with one of our counselors or get more information, then we always try to be available. We have an assessment process, which is where they'll meet with a counselor and just sort of talk about why they're there. you know, what they're looking to do, what their goals are, what kind of services they're looking for. And we just sort of get to know them to try to find out what are their strengths, what are the areas that we maybe need to help them to develop better strengths, and kind of go from there.
Is it an inpatient or outpatient or both?
We're all outpatient.
All outpatient.
That we provide. We do have an intensive outpatient, which is sort of that middle ground between outpatient and inpatient. The person can still stay at home. They can go to work every day and still come to treatment services multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. So those are for people who maybe don't need an inpatient level of care, but once a week is not going to be enough support. Mm-hmm. So we can do that. But we can also make referrals. So if they do need different levels of care, then we can do that as well.
And Ann, that also goes back into the state system of having the access of our sister agencies all across the state that have priority areas such as...
Do some places have intake where somebody goes and stays?
Oh, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yes, and there's even programs for mothers with infants, so that they can bring their child to treatment with them and continue the bonding process without having to be away and losing that precious time. There's facilities that are just for men. There are facilities that, you know, a lot of times placement, you have to wait for beds to become available before
sure.
they can offer that to you, and you're on a waiting list sometimes 4 or 6 weeks. But it could be that we just got an email from somewhere that said, hey, if anybody's looking for placement, we do have beds available here. It may not be in our direct, not Greenville.
Right.
They may have to go to the Lowcountry, but that's the beauty of our system of being able to share those resources among all the 33 agencies out there.
Yeah. You know, I'm always interested how people end up in the careers that they end up in. Lori, how did you graduated from Spartanburg Methodist College. You went to Baptist College of Charleston, received a master's degree in sociology. You were very well educated. How did you decide to get into working at Cornerstone, or both parts of the question, actually? What did you think you wanted to be when you were 15?
Oh, when I was 15... I knew that I always wanted to work with people. I just wasn't sure what avenue that I would be in. I've always enjoyed being around groups of people, and of course, that's where the sociology came into play. In my master's degree, one of my projects I did, I grew up here in Greenwood and lived on a farm. Part of my thesis preparation was I went around to cow sales across Tennessee and wrote papers on how someone could walk in there and be able to fit right in, know the language, know how to dress, know how to walk around, how to carry themselves, and how to understand what was going on. And I was really intrigued by different populations and how you would go in one in East Tennessee and then over near Bristol. It was a whole different process, and the way that people dressed, they were different than the folks that were in East Tennessee.
Sure.
So I knew that I was interested in working with groups of people, and I just wasn't sure. And I think sometimes even just knowing that we want to work with people, I think that this career found me, not that I found this career.
How so?
When I came to Cornerstone in 1990. I graduated from graduate school in 90, came back to Greenwood, was working temporarily.
Did you plan to come back to Greenwood?
No. Greenwood was the last place. I went to Spartanburg Methodist, and then I went to Charleston, and I played ball for 4 years in college. And that was kind of my focus there, was I was going to play ball, and then I went to get my master's. I actually tried to go get my doctorate degree, and my dad told me I could come home and get a job. So I came back to Greenwood, and when I came to Cornerstone and started working there, I started as a clinical counselor. And I remember Joyce Dillashaw was the deputy director. She just recently retired. Mm-hmm. And David Matthews, although that was the vacancy that they had open at the agency, they said they both looked at each other and said, she's a prevention person. Clearly, she is a prevention person. That time did come to where there was a vacancy in prevention, and I did transfer to the prevention department. I still maintain my clinical and my prevention certification. And it just put me out in front of people, talking to people, sharing what we do, talking to the community about the programs that are available, establishing relationships so that, you know, maybe they didn't know to come to Cornerstone, but they knew that they could call me and they knew that I worked there and that maybe I could shed some light on how they could get someone enrolled in services.
Now, how long have you been doing this?
I've been at Cornerstone for 25 years.
25 years. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the advancement, say, from 25 years, not so much your advancement, but the advancement in care and everything in today's world?
I think there's a lot of alternative programs that are being offered. I think there are a lot of quick fix methods out there being offered. And I think there's still a lot of hurting people out there. And the one thing that I'm most proud of is at our agency is that the dignity and respect that our clinicians and our staff, from the front office person, treats everyone who walks through the door with dignity and respect, and that they belong here, and we want to do what we can to help them.
Well, that's something that I think that priority and everything is definitely set from the top going down, so the executive director has to be the one bringing that to the fore.
Our previous executive director, David Matthews, who was there 35 years, died suddenly in April. It was a very traumatic time for us. He is the man that hired me. He was a mentor to me. He was kind of like a father to a lot of us, and he set the tone for that, and we just followed. Most of our people at our agency, we don't have a high turnover rate. Mm-hmm. Most of our staff have been there an average of 12 to 15 years.
That's impressive.
That is very impressive.
It absolutely is. Hey, when we come back, I'm going to put Teresa on the hot seat, so don't you go away. We'll be back in just a moment. This is WCRS. We're talking with Cornerstone today, Teresa Roy and Lori Fala. Hello. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG, that's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too, paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here having a fascinating conversation here. We have Lori Fala here, the executive director of Cornerstone, and we have Teresa Roy here, director of community outreach with Cornerstone and wife of Bob Roy, Index Journal, my Index Journal guy. And it's so nice to have you here today, Teresa.
Thank you. We really appreciate you having us today.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was asking Lori how she got involved, and you actually are director of community outreach, and you've been with them for almost 16 years. Boy, you guys do stick around at the jobs that you have, don't you?
That's right. When you find something good, you stick with it.
So, let's see. How did you end up working in drug and alcohol abuse programs? Because you kind of started down that road, didn't you?
Sure. When Lori was talking, that my father is actually the very first person that ever said to me or ever taught me that addiction is a disease. Mm-hmm. And he was very involved in a lot of volunteer work, got involved with Faith Home when we moved here back in the early 70s. So I've been going with him to a lot of Faith Home meetings and breakfasts and things like that and hanging out with him. So I think that really set kind of my path. It's planted some seeds. I'm like Lori. I knew I wanted to work with people. I've mm-hmm. always enjoyed working with people. My friends used to call me Dear Abby. I'm not so much sure if they appreciated the advice I gave them, but I was always free with it. So I kind of knew that was the direction I wanted to move in. And we did have my father had some family members who had substance use disorder. So it was always something that I was aware of that was very near and dear. I understood the struggle. And I understood the lack of resources, and I wanted to be a part of that. And as it turned out, when I graduated college, there was a job opportunity in Greenville at what is now the Phoenix Center. Then it was just the Greenville Commission on Alcohol and Drug Abuse. And so I started in an intervention program. I started working with school-age children and just kept going from there.
Oh, and here she is today. So, how'd you meet Bob?
How did I meet Bob? That's a very interesting story. We're both readers. He worked part-time at the Walden Books at the mall. And I'd been going in there for years. So it's interesting. Our paths crossed for years. At the time, I was married to someone else, and he was not available. And so after my divorce, you know, reading really became a solace for me. And so I was in there a lot, and we'd make googly eyes at each other. And one thing led to another, and he just asked me out one day, and it's been beautiful ever since.
It was kismet after that.
It was. It really was.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. Good to know. Now, you know, when you talk about Cornerstone and the services that they provide, one of them is going out into the schools, isn't it? Lori, you go out into the schools. I guess what my first question is, how does that help in today's world? Are we seeing that we can make strides by starting early?
Exactly, Ann. And to help you understand, maybe to get an idea of how the services worker, we have prevention programs. A lot of those are geared at young folks or schools. We have intervention services. Those can be referred from legal situations, and then we have treatment programs. So how the question that you asked, which was, have we found that it's better to start earlier? Yes, we have. And kind of tie this back into the question you asked me earlier of how are we doing different things different. I remember when I was at Greenwood High School, we used to have a program that would come in. It's called Scared Straight. I don't know if you remember that, Teresa.
I do.
But these were folks that were involved in a program while they were incarcerated, and they would come to the school and do a presentation about what led them down the wrong road and how the lifetime consequence that they had, and was hoping that we wouldn't make the same decisions. What we've found is become more of a science in this field to where they're looking at what they call evidence-based programs, which is outcome-oriented. So that we look at best practices. We look at things that are tried and true that says this is a curriculum that you can go by, and if you implement this with fidelity, then these are the results you can expect to see.
Sure.
So that's where I see that program, the prevention program, being able to impact more people. We're doing more of an environmental approach rather than going in and having a feel-good, let's talk about this session. Because knowledge alone does not change behaviors, but well, knowledge and enforcement together help with that.
You know, one of the things that I know, we have kids drinking earlier and earlier, getting a hold of alcohol, and I know one of the programs that the Sheriff's Department, the Police Department, they work to try to make sure, like at convenience stores and this type of thing, that they can't get access to it. But gosh darn, it's awful hard for, it's awful easy for a lot of them to get it right in the home.
Yes, ma'am. We have a poster that says the easiest place to get alcohol, and it has a picture of a refrigerator. It's not a commercial refrigerator. It's a residential. And that program you're referring to is a program that was started 6 years ago that we partnered with law enforcement to what we just said was enforcement alone nor education alone does not work. So we combined those two efforts. We did a study in town to find out where were kids getting it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them said they were going to the stores. So we took kids out to the stores, not to trick somebody. But what we did was we found there were a couple of stores that people just didn't know how to read IDs. So we went back and we taught those store owners. We didn't charge them or anything that day. We went out and did the blanket to kind of see, okay, where are you at with this? Mm-hmm. Some of them didn't have the equipment, and it was an easy fix. We bought them the equipment that came up, and there's a little digital thing that said, if you weren't born before this date, you cannot buy alcohol. You'll see
sometimes
signs.
Sometimes math is difficult, isn't it?
It is for some people, yes.
It is. Hey, it's time for South Carolina Radio News. We'll be back. If you've got a question, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. but before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. We've been having fascinating conversation here this afternoon. And, you know, Lori, one of the things that you and I and Teresa here were just talking about is how you change an attitude. And we were talking about underage drinking. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that a lot of people don't realize, how much effort has gone behind the scenes, shall we say, to make people understand. One of the things that you were just telling me is that the law actually states if I wanted to give my child some alcohol in my home, that's okay. Yes. But it's not okay for me to give alcohol to your child in my home.
Correct.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what does all that mean?
Well, what all that means is that is the way the law was written. That was in there for religious practices.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it gets interpreted a lot of different ways. But the biggest thing is that if a kid is under 21, if a parent does not give that alcohol to them, there's so many considerations you have to put in there, Anne. You have to look at the cultural makeup. You have to look at the way in which someone is drinking. You know, people talk about, well, they drink at 18 in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the rate and the way that people drink, when you come here and you go to a party with a keg, it's a little bit different than four ounces of wine.
It's how much can you drink, how fast you can drink it, and how drunk can you get.
Yes. I mean, there's different ways, and that's part of our cultural differences. People enjoy 4 ounces of wine with a meal,
mm-hmm.
and it's strictly 4 ounces of wine. That isn't the way we usually drink down here. Those are things.
No, that's very true. I want to tell you a little story. We had a girl from Brazil living with us. She was like an exchange student, and she was living with us. And we were going to sit down, and we were going to have dinner, and she was 20. And we said, well, would you like some wine? Yes, I'd love some wine. So she sat there. She took the glass of wine. Swear to God, she sat there and turned up the glass, and it was glub, 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 glub. And I said, what are you doing? We were having it with dinner. Oh, can I have another? No. Yeah, totally different culture.
That is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not as to what you were saying of how can we change some of those things. You know, first we look at the way we drink. We look at if I'm going to your house and you turn a blind eye, some of the efforts that we have made in the last 6 years, hopefully have opened some parents' eyes as to the potential consequences for turning a blind eye.
Well, some of the things that you have done working, I'll say, behind the scenes, but not really, is questioning kids about where they can get alcohol,
yes.
Right? And finding out that they were getting it at convenience stores.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do?
We did a survey. We found out that they said they were getting it at convenience stores. And they said that they were getting it from friends or siblings over 21 that were legally able to purchase it, but they didn't see a consequence in giving it to someone who was underage.
Right.
So to address the issue of the convenience stores or grocery stores allowing the sale of alcohol, then we went through, we took kids that were underage to the stores on a trial basis to find out why weren't they. Why is that a problem here?
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is that some people didn't have the right equipment. We found some people that they had the equipment, but they didn't know how to use it. We found some people that could use better training methods, that they got the job at the register. And I remember one of the people that I spoke with about the convenience stores, you know, they're working there to pay their bills.
Sure.
And they do not want to lose their job by selling to someone underage. So you see signs. There's one in one of the stores, and it was very interesting, and it says, you know, if you're under 21, the sodas are over there. And there's different creative ways of getting the message out there that says, we will check for ID. People were getting mad because they say I look 40, and they're asking me for my idea.
My ID.
And it's just a lot easier to check everybody and get in a habit rather than that one person slipping through and it costing someone their job.
Sure. And I think what you said you were able to do is tighten up at the convenience stores or grocery stores. Mm-hmm. So that became less of a loophole for somebody to be able to fall through. Then it came down to parties at houses, mm-hmm. at homes. Mm-hmm. And I can remember a couple, 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, time flies, you know, but when Tony Davis, Sheriff Tony Davis, and they went out and they arrested a bunch of kids, broke a house that was having a wild party, mm-hmm. and there were several of those that came up, one right after another. And then it seems like that's pulled back, and we don't see that type of activity or mentality now. Has there been a decrease?
There has been a decrease, I believe, but I believe they're also not being as open about their activities as they once were in the past, because when we first asked kids, do you think you'll get caught, they said no.
Okay.
When they ask if they did get caught, do they think they would suffer a consequence, and they said no. Well, 4 years later, we did the survey, and their attitudes have changed. And they say that there is a chance that I'll get caught, and there is a chance that I would suffer a consequence, that if I did get caught. Officers will tell you that it was different. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. You know, back in the 80s, the atmosphere was totally different than it is today. You know, and you look at if an officer sees you speeding down the road, and he had an opportunity to give you a ticket, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 miles later, you have an accident and hit Teresa.
Right.
Could he have intervened at that point by that ticket? Would that caused you to have slowed down and avoided that consequence? So with our surveys, with our parent focus groups, with our law enforcement groups, we sent a clear message that says we are looking. And especially during prom time and spring break time, which is
coming
right now.
Coming around, yep.
It's college spring break this week. There are a lot of colleges out on spring break. You got the district going on spring break. We have a great relationship with our school districts. We provide them with information. Actually, there was an email today that I got, and it's a flyer on spring break and how to help parents understand how to create a safe spring break kind of mentality around your home.
Yeah, but if you're sending those college kids down there to Florida, we've seen what type of things go on down there, haven't we, Teresa?
Sure. Yeah. We've seen more than we want to see sometimes. Yeah.
But what do you have to say about
that? Well, I was just going to say, we do try to do, and we have a good relationship with Lander. As a matter of fact, we were at Lander last week. And so we do try to give them information. And again, it's about empowering people to make healthy choices for themselves. So not only do we want to share with them consequences of some of these negative behaviors, but also give them options. You know, we don't want to take anyone's fun away. So what can you do to have fun and still be social without putting yourself
at
risk?
And be hip and fitting in. Yes.
Exactly. And without putting yourself at risk. And that really is sort of the bottom line, is trying to keep kids safe. You know, across the United States, about 5,000 youth under the age of 21 die every year because of alcohol in some form or fashion. And at Cornerstone, we think that's 5,000 too many. So yeah. We're just doing whatever we can to get the word out about how to be safe.
Statistically, based on 5 or 10 years ago, how is our nation doing? Any ideas how we're doing? I would just be curious because, you know, you do see the stuff about spring break and all the wild and crazy stuff. And we do seem to, in my opinion, you almost see like young people and you just think, you know, oh, I was wild and crazy, but they have taken it to another level. So you just wonder how we are doing, if this is having an effect, or are we still kind of out there on some things? Anybody know?
I think there's a lot of ways that we're still out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the attention that's been brought to one great example right now, Josh Hamilton, professional baseball player for the California Angels, who left Texas, went there. He was a kind of the comeback kid of recovery in that he had had an addiction, and they took a chance on him, and he just had a relapse. And it just reminds me how real this is. This is someone who had a $125 million contract. And, you know, it's not about all the money in the world couldn't keep him clean. And it was just a behavior. It was just his addiction that contributed to that relapse. And he's at a critical point in his life right now to figure out, where do I go from here?
Sure.
And there's a lot of professional athletes that kids have seen.
Well, kids look up to, yeah.
Yes, and thought, why would they do that? And that's what we're saying is, sometimes that's not by choice. If you look at it just like someone that has cancer, that it is a disease. And we don't say, now why did they go and get cancer?
No, we don't. Why did you go and have a heart attack today?
Right. And this is just part of what we're dealing with here. We try to give folks the right tools to help them make better decisions and help them get a better understanding of
And
how
I think some people they say addictive personalities or more prone to it, so therefore it is more difficult. And just knowing that you're that way can make a huge difference, don't you think, Teresa?
Sure, and it's like Laurie was saying, though, I think tools are very important, because if I were to send you out to build a fence and I only gave you a pencil, you wouldn't get very far. And sometimes one of the things that we've found in working with people is that people are doing the best that they know how to do.
Sure.
And somewhere along the line, they did not get the tools. They did not get the information that they needed. And that's part of what we also try to do, is give them those tools, because addiction is real. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that goes away. Once a person has crossed over into addiction, it's going to be something it's going to be a journey for them. It's going to be something that they're going to deal with the rest of their life. And we just want to try to help support them. So it's important to give people the resources that they need.
So, addiction is a disease. How do you get it?
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, we do know that addiction tends to run in families. Mm-hmm. So there are people who have a greater likelihood, a greater genetic predisposition to developing substances. But anybody can become dependent on something. And there are a lot of different ways that plays out. And, you know, working with youth, one of the things that we see is a lot of times kids get into behaviors like smoking because they think it makes them look cool, or they want to fit in, or whatever their reasons are for using it, but they don't understand that addictive process. And so when you ask them, will you be doing this when you're in college or when you graduate college? No, I'm just going to do it for a little while and then I'll quit. Mm-hmm. And what they don't understand is that by the time they decide they're at that age, now they have really moved into that addiction, and it's not so easy.
Right.
So there really are a lot of different ways. If you ask people who have a substance use disorder why they started, you'll probably get different answers for different people. And it depends on not only this genetic predisposition, but it depends on opportunity. It depends on do they have other resources? Do they have other tools that they can use? Is this something that they're using to cope? If it is, then we've got to get to the root. We've got to deal with whatever it is, the behavior that is triggering this addiction. And so we really want to work with them on that.
Now, Lori, I guess I would say, how does Cornerstone work with people? You were talking about, Teresa was talking about, you have an intake form, you fill that out. Then what type of programs do you have that are available as part of the toolkit to help people?
Once someone comes in and has the assessment, which is a biopsychosocial inventory of all of those
things. That sounds
things.
Scary now. You're going with big words here, and you're trying to analyze me, I can tell.
Well, we're looking at their predisposition. We're looking at their past history of legal consequences. We're looking at their health
history.
Have they
gotten themselves in some trouble?
Right.
And is that what brought them to your door?
Yeah, it could be a red flag for us saying that this has been going on for a while. You know, why is it today that they want to get treated today? So when they come in,
because the judge said if I didn't straighten up, I wasn't going to be able to be back on the road,
right?
Yeah.
And there are some people that is the only motivation,
right?
Which is to get their license back,
right?
And we're okay with that. That hopefully, while they're in the program, they can take some valuable information and use it at some later point in life. There are some people that make one bad decision, and they won't be in that situation again. But the services that we could offer would be individual, family, or group. They
counseling.
Mm-hmm. They may need to be with probably most people would go through an educational component so that everybody would be on the same level of understanding. They're
I'll
speaking
bet a lot
the
of
same
people
language.
Say, that's not me. That's not me. Mm-hmm. I'm not in that boat. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's those other people over there, right?
Right. I don't look like them. I'm not like them.
Right.
You know, we may get them very early on, and they haven't graduated to that choice being made for them rather than them making the choice to use this.
Mm-hmm.
So after everybody's on the same page for an educational level of speaking the same language, then they'll either be placed in a group session, and during that group session, they may talk with the counselor and the group and look at, everybody has a treatment plan that they have to work on and show a reduction in their risk for recidivism. So maybe they're looking at ways to lower my risk of getting another DUI.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to, while they're in group, process ways that they have made changes from placing themselves in that same situation again.
Well, that sounds pretty easy. Just get somebody else to drive.
That is one solution for some people.
Right.
And then there's people say, well, it's hard to do here because we have limited public transportation.
Sure.
And if that is an issue for someone, then we need a plan B.
Okay.
Because it didn't work last time if that was the plan that you had and you're paying a consequence for it. So what can we do next time so that we don't suffer a consequence? And we also try to educate them that if they try to put that in place and they're not capable of doing that, maybe this might be a little bit more important than someone is able to convey to us right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we help them look at the role that whether it is alcohol or drugs or pills or any type of substance
mm-hmm.
that is helping them get through something that how detrimental is that going to be later on? Is that going to be what it's going to take for them to be normal?
Now, what about cost? Does it cost mm-hmm. to go to Cornerstone?
Yes, ma'am, it does cost to go to Cornerstone.
Okay.
We have staff. We have office buildings, light bills. We are a not-for-profit. We do not deny services for someone that is not able to pay. We actually have two programs going on right now that we have signed up to take part in, where if someone comes in and they're uninsured or underinsured, then we're going to enroll them in this program and their assessment's going to be paid for.
Mm-hmm.
There's another program that after that, and they're placed in treatment, and they don't have the avenue to pay for services, and they don't have insurance, then we're going to build this separate program that would allow them to cover the treatment costs while they're in the program. So we will work with anybody. If they can pay $5 a month,
mm-hmm.
then we will accept $5 a month. We know that people value services more when they're invested in it just a little bit themselves.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to take a 2-minute break and we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, That's right. We're right back here coming to the top of the hour. You know, we've had a very, I think, informative conversation this afternoon with Teresa and with Lori. You know, I really appreciate you coming out and filling us in, because sometimes you hear about this place called Cornerstone, but you don't really know what Cornerstone is. And I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that they're learning about it. So, you have a, in fact, one of the things we wanted to mention is that if somebody would like to have a group conversation, whether it's a school group or church group, Teresa, how does this work?
Really easy. They just give us a call at 227-1001. They can ask to speak with me, and we'll be glad to set something up. We can go out and talk with groups of people. We can talk about specific topics, or we can just do general information. We also have a resource library, so we have lots of pamphlets and brochures on various topics. So if people are interested in learning more, just give us a call and we'll make sure to get that information to them.
Sure. Or you can stop on by. Now, where is Cornerstone again?
We're at 1612 Rivers Street. We're right behind Walmart on the corner of Budrow and Rivers Street.
Right across from Jumpin' Jack. Is that
right?
There you go.
That's right.
All right. Well, you have a big event coming up, and I was actually just asking you, this is Ross Bennett. He's a comedian. He's been in recovery since 1987. He says he's recovering one laugh at a time. It's a free event. Now, come on. How can you do this? How can you do this, Lori?
We presented this to our board and told them that the reason we wanted to do this, and it really was twofold, because our clients said they wanted something focused on recovery. And our boss man, who died last year, David Matthews, everybody in our office, if you can ask them what they remember about him the most, it was his laugh.
Mm-hmm.
The two fit together very well, and our board said, if our clients are saying that we need this in the community, I want to do it for free. So I'm asking the community to please help support this, so that in the event we go back to our board and ask for a repeat of an event such as this, that they would know that you would support it. And you don't have to be in recovery to come enjoy the comedian.
No, comedy is comedy.
Comedy is comedy.
That's right. Hey, you know, you're listening to WCRS. We're actually going to have free tickets to give away on Giveaway Friday. And you can get the tickets at Cornerstone. Can they get them when they come to the door that night? Or do you have to have them in advance?
We're asking them to get them in advance because we're going to provide some refreshments.
Okay.
And it would be better if we knew about how many to plan for. So okay. Our tickets are numbered, so okay. We'd know how to do that.
Okay. So if you'd like to see about bringing a group, which would be an excellent thing, contact Cornerstone, 227-1001. That's 227-1001. That is April 9th, 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Rivers Street Campus. I think y'all are doing an awesome job, and, you know, I think everybody could use a little support sometime in their life. And to have organizations out there that help the community and help those in need. The other thing, I think you should never be ashamed to pick up the phone and call and get some information. Would that be right, Teresa?
That's exactly right, because every journey begins with the first step.
That's right. And if you know somebody in your family that is having problems, try to get them some help. I know it's tough sometimes, isn't it? It's tough to get somebody that you can see going down a path that you know is going to end badly. What do you do? That's the last question. Swear. It's the last question. What do you do if you're watching somebody going down, burning in flames right here, and they can't seem to see it themselves? Because that's a lot of people. That's where they're at.
Right. And that is a tough situation to be in. And a lot of people feel like unless the person is just 100% ready to come to treatment, that treatment won't do any good. But we've seen that not be the case. Father Martin, who was a big advocate, he was in recovery himself. He was a Catholic priest. He used to say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, but you can make him thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we try to do, is we try to provide an atmosphere where people can learn different ways, that there is something else out there. And we're asking them to change, and change is very scary. And we know that. And sometimes it's easier to keep doing what we're doing, even though we don't like the results, because it's a known quantity.
Sure.
And change is that unknown. And so we really do try to be there to support and encourage them. But if you've got someone you're concerned about, I'd say just fight for them. You know, love them, let them suffer consequences, because sometimes that's what it takes to get them in the doors. But just let them know that you support them and you love them, and that this isn't anything to be ashamed of, that it takes real courage to come in and say, I need to change some things in my life.
Absolutely. Well, Cornerstone, Lori and Teresa, thanks so much for coming out today.
Thank you
for having us.
Absolutely. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.